This is the CC Radio Podcast.
Welcome to episode 288 of the Countdown Podcast. Today we're the top 10 last 10 coming out of lockdown edition cracker doing peoples. That's what we're doing today. My name is Wayne.
Not sure where the cracker came from, but yes, otherwise my name is Paul. Welcome to the podcast with Countdown Movies and sometimes television in order of awesomeness, so you don't have to, but not today. Today is all about the film.
Ta-ha!
It's our semi-regular episode. Every 8 to 12 weeks we rock this one out where we review 10 films that we haven't had a chance to talk about on the show. For your enjoyment. And in my case today, I've made a special effort to do these big VOD releases that would have come to theaters, haven't managed to do so because of the ongoing pandemic around the world. And I wanted to give you guidance on whether you should bother to spend your premium dollars or not on them.
That was a smart move, Paul. I didn't really do that. Here's what I did. I went and gone, oh, that movie looks interesting. I'm going to hit that. All right? Because it had...
Controversial.
Well, because it had big actors in it. Like, also, no, okay, obviously. Occasionally, you know?
Whatever floats your boat.
Yeah, so you probably found Paul's more fun and more interesting than mine.
Well, it might be more relevant, but not more interesting, because I have to say almost everything's been released as a thriller, horror, or a drama. So, not a lot of variation from genre-wise on my list.
Very much.
So that's what today is about. But before we get there, let's get into the episode proper with the first segment that's called...
Who wants a recap?
Who wants a recap?
Who
wants a recap?
Who
wants a recap?
The recount is our mail room. Paul, what mail did we get?
Well, we've had a new listener, relatively new listener, not before coffee, or at need_3_mugs on Twitter, comment about loving the way you say, Yaquim.
Fuck off, you wrote this. This is not real.
Was so much easier when he was credited as Leaf, which is a fucking good point.
Yes, absolutely.
Even I can't get Leaf wrong.
You know, your mom, because like, okay, so it's River, Leaf. The mother named herself Heart, and I don't know what the dad's name was, but it was probably something like...
Bruce. Like a,
yeah. It was James.
Bruce, yeah. James Phoenix. He's just going, whatever you want, darling.
And there's no moon unit Phoenix at all. So what are you going to do? But yes, I would have, if your name was Leaf, you'd have changed it. Not to Joaquim, which he didn't do, by the way.
Anyway, long-standing gag on the show if you're new to it. Sorry, thanks so much for joining us for this moment. Now, we've had 2 weeks of results to clear up. You're leading, I believe, 13-12.
I haven't checked on
the year up until this point.
Anyone would know it would be you.
Now, the first of those was from 2 weeks ago in episode 286, which was Villain Comeuppances. I think I've got that one right.
Okay, how'd that one go?
No, sorry. Countdown 286 was the top 10 illogical movie scenes. This one was an absolute nail biter.
Was it really?
Yeah. Again, up coming down to it. The normal time we record last Sunday, we were on 30 votes apiece.
Yeah.
And so it's a tie. The first tie of 2020. Hooray! You're supposed to react.
Oh, sorry. Sorry, I was really listening to the results. I was like, here we are.
So I wasn't going to add anything more to it except to say we're now still on 33 apiece locked.
Oh, really?
So even today, even if we were to do it right this second, it's still a tie. But as we always have done in the past, we call it at the time we would normally record, which is Sunday afternoon-ish, and there we go.
So who won?
It was a tie.
Oh, it was a tie.
That's what I said.
Sorry, bitch. I must have missed you saying that. I was looking at your face and I'm like, what?
Not cutting any of that. Okay. You can all see that's what fine. I have to put
that's
up with.
That's fine. It's fine. Good.
Seems to be what got you the tie is your call of Buzz Lightyear not... reacting to humans coming around.
As though he was a toy when he thought he was not a toy.
Exactly, that one got you a lot of votes. Stuff. However, my brother, waiting to support me, you know, my voting block of...
Oh, you have a voting, yes, you actually have.
Thank you, bro. Adam said, Wayne, what is with Looper at number two? In your own words, eat all the asses, man. Paul explained it perfectly.
Actually, I saw that comment, and eat my balls, my friend, because I've got it here, okay? Paul Dano died in the past as well, so he would have also disappeared before.
Eventually, did he die?
No, he did die, because as he walked into the bread, they killed him, and he died, and he disappeared.
Yeah, at that point, because they hadn't killed him till then.
Yeah,
but he was surviving by cutting arms.
Yeah, but how do you cut, like, the point is, if he died at past, he would have never been...
No, otherwise, the same thing would apply to Bruce Willis's character, because he would have died, because that ultimately is what happened. That's not the way that time travel works in that movie. Time travel gets reset every time something happens.
But surely, like, when you get blown away with a thing in your chest, you'll see that first. I don't know. Fuck it. All right, fine. Whatever.
All right. We definitely got Tammy Davis and Daniel Lowe both said the Buzz Lightyear one was a stroke of genius, so votes for you. Jonathan Kidd said, have to go Wayne for finding a flaw in Jurassic Park and Spidey 2.
What?
Yeah. Adam Allure said, Paul made the great point. I got a few votes for this one about Princess Leia, although
exactly
someone,
as many as me. Yeah.
Someone basically said, Paul banged on Princess Leia for way too long. How dare you? What a piece of shit that was. Michelle Dodo actually said, I vote for Wayne because I can't forgive Paul for putting Leia on his list. I don't care how illogical it might be. That's the point of the show, Michelle.
I love that. On point, Michelle.
Oh, God.
Bring it. Bring it, girl.
And Cameron Petty said, I vote for Paul this week as I felt more of his choices actually ruined the film / franchises. So there we go.
Okay.
But yeah, tie in the end for that one.
That's nice. We haven't had one of those in ever.
A year, give or take.
Yeah, okay.
Now, unfortunately, episode 287.
How'd that one go? As if I didn't know from your tone. I actually don't know how it went. You're a bitch.
I'll tell you how it went, Wayne. It went wrongly.
What happened?
Well, obviously from the tone of this particular
yes,
song.
Oh, I think I know what happened, but tell me how it happened.
Villain comeuppances was this week's countdown, and who did you like better? It was very close. Came down to 3 votes as at the time of recording, which is now. I am talking, you've won, obviously,
okay,
which
right,
is
okay.
Just a travesty. 22 votes to 19.
Oh, so it was close.
It was close again, and I've lost the one. So you're 14, 12, 1, up. In fact, someone voted for you whilst
could
I pressed refresh on the
page. Put fucking music off, please, you asshole. Turn it off, bitch. Turn it off. You're killing me. You're killing me, man. This is annoying to everyone.
My balls.
Are you waiting for some bullshit swell like you always do, which takes way too long?
Look,
is that what's happening?
I'm like the women in your life. There's only one swell that matters.
It hasn't happened yet, has it?
No, it hasn't. It absolutely has. Alright,
God. Go on.
In fact, I'm gonna vote whilst I was talking.
You know why? Because of this fucking oh no, it's not like
nice try, asshole. Oh God. First of all, Wayne is making me feel like I'm playing favorites, but I just love the double Sin City grab. I cannot believe you've been rewarded for being lazy enough not to put 10 in.
It's not lazy. I had to fight with myself to put both in there. It's a really weird move for a podcaster, yeah. And I made
Nicole Presley, i.e. the president of the Wayne voting block, said, the Sin City villains were a great call.
My girl.
Cameron Petty this time said, Wayne with a Sin City double header. Great picks, both of them. Smiley Somali did say, Paul gets mine for counter-hooking to Six-Fingered Man.
That guy's always up your butt, though.
No, he's not. He often votes for you.
No, I think you'll find he's one of your block.
Mina Harker also said Wayne may have mined the same film at the top of his list, but it's a killer 1-2 punch. Also a very strong supporter of the Wayne voting block. Mark Bryant said Wayne Sin City. Basically, you won on the basis of having the same film twice in list. Hence,
I think you're, because everyone knows
sad,
it was a brave
in
move.
In fact, maybe we need to replay that music.
No, we don't, motherfucker. Bitch.
All right, the last part of today. Well done. Well done on the win. Well played,
you.
Sir. 14,
such a
12,
great winner.
1. Well, you said thank you. That's good winning.
No, I said you're such a great winner. You fucking went and played fucking music and shit.
Great loser. Chris O'Neill, this comes from he's a good friend of the show, patron of the show. Said, ever since the Hot Chris Films episode a few weeks ago, every time I type my name into my phone at the end of a business email, etc., instead of prompting O'Neill, like it used to, it now prompts Evans. Nice to know even my phone prefers him over me. Shaking my head. I thought that was worth sharing.
To be fair, none of us have got that guy beat, so no, what you want to do?
Exactly that. All right, on the other side of this music cue then, let's get into it proper. The top 10 last 10 coming out of lockdown edition.
Rolls off the top.
We'll be right back. Lockdown easy is the subject of this week's countdown. I've changed the name. There it is. Lockdown easing. Remember that, Wayne.
Lockdown easy.
Easing.
Oh, easing.
Yeah, edition. Sure. I think that's the way that works. That's the one I decided upon when I was sober.
No
so,
problem.
Yeah, excellent. Is what we're doing today. Now, this is, as we talked about, it's 10 films we recently watched from worst to best. So we're starting off with the shit. We're ending with the best. I do have some good films on my list. I have some absolute pants, as is normally the case.
Of course.
Yeah. And Wayne?
Mine's... Look, it's not great, all right? Like, I don't recommend till quite far into
I'm recommending from four onwards. Mm. I'll say that now. We'll let you know when we recommend,
basically. I think it's three.
All right. In that case, you've got more shit than I do. Take us away. You're number 10.
Well, let's just get this out of the way, everyone. My number 10 is Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey. I watched that fucking thing because I had to watch all of them for the fucking third one, which we did a review of, and... Wow. The first one had me for a while until I went, oh, that's right. But then this one was
when the
first one thing with the stage thing and they did their report, like as a fucking play with all of the fucking, I was like, yeah, this is stupid, right? But that, before, up to then I was okay with it. This one is fucking weird. What's with the fashion of the future? Everyone's wearing foam sheeting cut in various shapes and shitty
boots. You don't know what the future's going to be like?
Dude, the future's not going to be like that. But it was actually foam sheeting,
bitch,
man.
Please.
And moon boots, bitch. All right? Not a lot of budget on props, this one. Okay? So Rufus, like, at the end, throws a guitar on top of the telephone box. Somehow, that allows drag him through time.
Not at the end.
At the beginning. Yeah. But he's going through time and shit. And I'm like, why?
Yeah, and it becomes that hot metal chick who's giving them a chance on Battle of the Bands.
Yeah, but why is it
makes
a guitar?
Perfect sense.
And Rufus, don't you have like a rope or a grappling hook? You know what happened?
Well, no, not on hand because he was in class.
No. Here's what happened. The props department go, hey, can you somehow make him like trail behind this fucking box for eternity? Yeah, okay. What if one of the strings in his guitar gets caught? And that's how... What the fuck? It was just that they couldn't be bothered shooting a scene or building a prop. That's what's going on there. And I think the 31-minute mark for me was where I went, fuck off, because it was where Ted turns into a ghost and then forces himself inside the ear of his dad during a meeting with the police. And I was like, fuck off.
And then the dad gets up and says, Oh, look, if you don't like that scene, I'm sorry. We don't often use this on the actual countdown. We often use it on the review.
Fuck off. I am not Negatron. Bitch, please. Anyway.
Oh, sorry.
Bitch, please.
No, fuck off.
Anyway, well, okay. Out of interest, then. Yes. This is the worst you've watched in the last, 2 months?
Yeah.
Since we, 2.5 months?
Yeah.
What score do you give this out of 100?
Oh. 10? No, 20. No, fuck it. 10. No, 15. There you go.
He's like, how the Wayne's mind works.
Totally.
My number 10 is way, way worse than anything that Bill and Ted could ever hope
fair
to
enough.
Conjure.
Fair enough. I mean, fair enough.
It's a film called She Dies Tomorrow, directed by Amy Semetz, who is an actress who's been in quite a few different films, often low-budget kind of mumblecore horror films.
Oh, poor films.
Yeah, it's fair to say. Fair to say. Came out this year, and it was widely... It's like one of these films got 84% positive among Rotten Tomatoes critics, substantially lower among audiences, so it's got that big decline. I think it's like 57-58%.
Yep.
This is a film which has a great premise. Amy, the character's name in the film, comes to believe she's going to die tomorrow. She's got this belief. She's had this massive anxiety attack, so it's like, and she really believes she's going to die.
Purely on her own, nothing told her that?
Well, eventually comes around to it later on and her boyfriend has this reaction and he believes it and blah, blah, blah. But then she tells her friend this and then the friend, and it's represented by purple and red lights flashing in the characters, in the actor's face. The friend comes to believe that. And so it becomes like this disease, this belief you're going to die tomorrow. Fascinating premise. I think it's wonderfully relevant in the pandemic that we're currently living through.
Yeah, now that I think about it, yeah.
Right? Should have been brilliant. Boring as fuck.
Really?
Goes nowhere. Now, I know Joey from our good friend from the So Is It podcast, patron of the show.
Mm-hmm.
He reviewed it by himself and he lasted 3 minutes in talking about this film.
Why?
It's
shit.
It's fucking terrible. It's the second worst film I've seen this year behind Capone, he said.
Oh, it's Capone shit.
Capone apparently is reprehensibly bad from the guy that did the Fantastic Four.
Oh, Josh Trank. Oh, he's done.
Yeah. This film, oh my God, it's so boring. It's basically people standing around and then passing on to themselves, and then this really terrible short arc for whatever the character is. Like, one character breaks up with another saying, I meant to do it months ago, but your dad got sick. And that character kills his dad by taking his life support out. And he's like, yeah, I should have done that 4 months ago, Dad. And then massive spoilers here, right?
Yeah, no one's going to watch this movie.
Massive spoilers for She Dies Tomorrow. Skip forward 30 seconds as of this point, because that's all it will be. Three, two, one. No one dies tomorrow. We don't see anyone die tomorrow. What? We see them all set up to die tomorrow, but the film ends before any of them do.
Oh, that's the...
Except for the person who commits suicide because they're convinced they're going to die tomorrow.
Okay, you can't do that to Paul movies, because if no one dies in this movie, Paul is pissed about that shit.
Well, I'm pissed that, like, there's not even an answer whether this was real or not.
No one acts
like a real fucking human being when they are infected. Yeah. No one. It is garbage. And the fact that critics like it just because it happens to be taking place at the time of a pandemic.
Is that what's going on?
All I can fucking imagine. Incenses me no end.
No, this is a...
Fuck this piece of shit film. Fuck it right
This is the number
ass.
10 for you. So, yeah. So, okay, well, that's... I get it, because my number 9 is also a ballsack boring movie. But you might be fooled into thinking it wouldn't be because it's a spy thriller.
Oh, look out. Wayne's bread and butter.
Exactly. As I said, spy thrillers are the best kind of movies because I'll always go see a spy thriller, right? Ben Kingsley, Monica Bellucci. A movie is called Spider in the Web.
No, I've not seen this one.
I know. It's a really...
Is it old?
It's like 2 years ago, not 2019.
Shit.
Yeah. It's
1 year ago, Wayne, but thank you.
Sorry, 1 year ago. Like 2 years ago. It's 1 year ago. Okay, so Ben Kingsley plays this dude named Edereth, who is an aging Mossad spy, an Israeli spy.
Man, he really can't fight any nation.
Well, the thing is, he's not doing an Israeli accent. He's doing an English. He's playing himself, because a spy can really, like, there are plenty of, like, double agent spies or whatever. They're English or whatever. Anyway, so he's on this one last mission to redeem his life and career before the clock runs out, basically. It becomes him investigating a company suspected of selling chemical weapons, yada, yada, yada. To be honest with you, it doesn't really matter because the movie's so fucking boring, right? Mm. It goes on and bloody on, and it becomes like a drama. It's barely set in a spy thing. It's so shit. Do not even think about it. It is slow. Kingsley is really good in it. His charm and stuff actually carries the movie, but it still goes for too long and takes too long to get there. So, oh,
fair enough.
Piece of crap.
Sounds terrible. Thank you for that.
Very slow.
My number 9 then is another supposed horror. It's directed by David Coepp. Now, Wayne, do you know that name?
I know of this name, yes. Who's he?
He's written some really big films, but he's directed some which are renowned, like Stir of Echoes.
Oh, pretty I good. Like that show. Yeah,
pretty good. He's also directed some of your favorites, Mordecai.
Oh, fuck Mordecai.
And Secret Window. Do you remember that awesome fucking film?
Oh, man, what a piece of shit. Yeah. That one and the other book one was crap.
But he's written so many films. He wrote, like, Jurassic Park, one of the co-writers in that, Lost World, Mission Impossible, Carlito's Way, Death Becomes Her.
Oh!
Which are spoilers for the end of the episode. I'll just tell you now. Dan from Netflix and Spiel says, it's all right.
What?
It's fine, is Dan's review of Death Becomes Her.
Do you disagree with that? Or?
Nah, it sounds about right, to be honest.
I like that movie.
Okay, you like it more than me do.
Okay.
War of the Worlds, The Mummy. So he's written a lot of films, but anyway, he's directed relatively few. Here's his latest one, You Should Have Left.
You Should Have Left.
Starring Kevin Bacon.
Oh.
And Amanda Seyfried?
Seyfried, whatever, yeah.
Yeah. And it basically follows this guy who's an older guy, Kevin Bacon, who's married to a younger hot actress.
Sounds real.
Yep. And he's got lots of money because he was a banker and he made shit tons.
Sounds very real.
And he, as you find out through the course of the film, there's something that happened in his past which everyone judges him for.
Okay.
Right. And they've got a kid together.
But you don't know what it is.
Not initially, fine. Yeah. I won't spoil it because we try not to spoil here other than what I just did before because I didn't want anyone to see this film.
All good.
This one's barely any better than She Dies Tomorrow because ultimately it wants to be this mindfuck of a movie. It is an absolute snore.
Really? So from the Stir of Echo guys, which I really liked, and that's a mindfucky movie.
They book this vacation basically together because they're starting to fray a little bit in their relationship and they take the kid with them and they go to this place in Wales. In the middle of the countryside, this beautiful house, which is weird. Its architecture is weird.
Really?
To the point where they note on it and go like, oh, hang on. How is this room this long and outside is that long? Like that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And things go along and it's exceedingly obvious. Like, the great mindfuck twist of the film
you
is
you saw
like,
it coming miles away.
I wouldn't see it coming. You would see it coming, Wayne. I mean, anyone who's paying half attention still will see it coming.
Really?
It's so painful.
If you think hurts. I would see it coming, then someone fucked up. Because I don't
and
see
it
shit
wants
coming.
To believe this is amazing. And it's not scary. To quote our friend Jason from the Binge Movies podcast, you put a child in danger. That's the film's last bastion of, dear God, please, this film is sinking. And that's the only thing
trying
this film
to make
does.
You care.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Puts a kid in danger and wants you to rescue that kid.
Interesting point. Interesting point. You're right.
It's terrible. It's god awful. The ending is awful.
Is it like no payoff ending or is it a shit payoff ending?
Shit.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know exactly what's going on by the end. It's not like it just ends, unlike She Dies Tomorrow, it just fucking ends.
Yeah.
This one at least has an ending, which is why it's a better film, but it's terrible.
Okay. All right. Not bad. I mean, I never would have seen it, but Kevin Bacon, though, I like that guy's
this
stuff.
This one
usually.
Was all the rage on the video on demand market probably 6 or 8 weeks ago. So, yeah.
Okay. I think my one may be known by some people as well. This is my number
8.
Right. Ava. The movie's called Ava.
Yeah, you tried to get us through this for a review.
I know.
And it's on my watch list.
Right. Now,
but I can tell you from watching that trailer, it's god awful.
No, wait. I can tell you. Okay, so listen. Okay. Guys, it's a spy thriller. Of course. All right. Now, it stars Jessica Chastain. She plays Ava, who's a deadly assassin who works for some black ops organization, travels the globe, specializes in high-profile hits.
Any relationship to Bridget Fonda?
Oh, right. Sorry.
Point of No Return
Assassin. Yes, the Assassin, of course. No, actually, that one is such a better movie. Oh. But
which itself is an inferior version of La Femme Nikita.
Yes, exactly. So, but this here, like, this Ava girl, she does have this odd problem that she actually has a bit of a conscience. And so that means she talks.
Odd problem.
Well, for a hitman, right? Like, so she. Hit person.
Hit person, thank you. all for the non-genderification of items on this show. Or terms on the show, including,
I don't know what you were going to go with.
Well, I'm going to steal a joke here from the late show, The D-Generation.
Go on.
Where no longer called a Walkman, it's called a Walk Person.
It's basically there. But anyway, yeah, so she talks to her marks before she kills them, trying to figure out that they're bad and shit like that, okay? Spy thriller, awesome. Jessica Chastain, awesome. Listen to the rest of this cast. John Malkovich, Common, Gina Davis, Colin Farrell, Ian Gruffudd, and Joan Chen. These are relatively big actors. This should have been a pretty good movie.
Yep.
All right.
What went wrong?
The problem is that, after seeing one Charlize Theron do action and sell it about as well as you could.
Atomic Blonde,
that last one, The Old Guard. I did a couple problems with it, but basically she's good. Just Jessica Chastain, as amazing and beautiful and awesome as she is, just can't sell that action. It just doesn't look like she's taking out 200 motherfuckers.
Hot damn! Wow, for Wayne to shit on the Chastain.
Don't get me wrong. It's not a bad movie. There is an interesting fight involving Colin Farrell.
It's not a bad movie?
So no, it's not.
At number 8? I thought you said your recommend was at number 3.
This is where it feels like on the list for me. It's not a terrible, terrible movie. Sorry, when I say not a bad movie, it's not. I don't recommend it. All right,
don't.
Like, it's not good enough to say, oh, you got to see this, right? No way. But it's not like this horrifically executed movie.
Okay,
it's
so we're past horrific for you already.
Yeah. It's not like, it just drags a real bit at the end, and it's not put together well enough. It's good to watch because she's on the screen.
All right, take several marks off.
No, it's fine. No, she does a good enough job. Not quite good enough job, but still not a terrible job. How's
okay.
that?
All right, my number 8 is also a terrible film. It's a remake of I want to say Swedish, but I could be wrong, Force Majeure. It's called Downhill, and it's directed by Nat Faxon and Jim Rash, who have been responsible for some good films, including The Way, Way Back, I think.
Oh, you saw that?
I think that's what it's called.
Is that the Ben Affleck one?
No, that's The Way Back.
Oh, got it.
Yeah, I could have done that one. No, The Way, Way Back is about a sort of coming-of-age film about a young teenager in a aquatic park, waterside park, and it's got Sam Rockwell in it.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
If you haven't seen it, you bloody well should. It's
okay.
Pretty good.
Cool.
This is basically American family go to the Alps, and their life's thrown into disarray when a triggered explosion or to get rid of the excess snow basically rolls over where they are. And the dad, Will Ferrell, in the film.
Yes, I know.
He goes
this
running
is.
For cover.
Yeah. Tell
leaving
me what this is.
Julia Louise Dreyfus.
Yep.
Julia Louise. Julia Louis Dreyfus. And the kids basically to fend for themselves. And the way it plays out the rest of the film, it's meant to be funny. The problem with this film is it's just not funny.
Now, I had a real interest, like, because I saw this trailer and I'm like, oh, that's what this is about. But it's being played for a comedy. But how can it be played for a comedy, man?
Well, here's the thing, all right? Maybe this is a gross generalization of the difference between European and American cinema. European cinema does a better job at blending genres and finding nuance. Black comedy, that's the word, nuance, in serious stuff. American cinema, I don't know what it is and why it is, but it's not so good at finding that blend.
This
film doesn't do it at all. Like, you're meant to be laughing throughout, but it's just awkward because I think had they played this like a straight drama, it might have worked.
Really?
But it doesn't because they're... Not that Will Ferrell's being his typical Will Ferrell self. He's very rarely going down that road. And Julia Louis-Dreyfus is the best of the lot.
Okay. Like, not a big surprise.
I really believe what she's doing in this film and her reactions in the movie. But he's such a prick.
Will Ferrell is a prick?
Yeah, the character in the film is such a prick.
Is he played for laughs?
Well, that's my point. They're trying to play his prickness for laughs.
Yeah.
It's not funny.
So this is an American... Because I remember looking at the trailer and thinking it didn't look that American to me for some reason.
It was set in the Alps or whatever else.
Yeah, something like that. That's what it was.
And then Miranda Otto's playing, who's Australian, is playing this like over-sexualized kind of Swiss woman who works high up on the Alps, whatever else, and... That's awkward and weird and funny.
I'm a bit disappointed to hear this was bad because I did want to look at it.
Yeah, it was shat all over by the critics, so I'm not really straying out of my lane when I say this.
Yeah. Tell me the name again.
Downhill.
Downhill, of course.
Don't bother is my basic sentiment there.
Cool.
Oh, and one more thing. The ending is just completely and utterly comes out of nowhere and you're like, that's it?
Oh, really?
Holy shit.
For a movie like this and then that happens?
Yeah.
It's a bit weird. Okay, fair enough. Folks, my number 7 is a little-known rom-com starring Captain America called Playing It Cool.
Wow.
Yeah. Now, again, listen to this cast list. This is what brought me on here. So Chris Evans, yes. Michelle Monaghan, no, I'm a fan. Of course she is. Topher Grace, Aubrey Plaza, Luke Wilson, Anthony Mackie, Ian Gruffudd again, and Patrick Warburton. Right?
It's Ian Gruffudd week.
It is.
On the countdown.
It is. And by the way, I think he's always going to be the good-looking boyfriend character. That's what he always plays.
Fantastic Four.
Yeah,
original.
Well, that's when it.
The one with.
When he was Mr. Fantastic.
Jessica Alba.
Yes, that's right. No, that was all good. But now he's playing the guy who pisses on people in that horrible bosses movie. He plays bit parts where he's always like.
He was in a really terrible we've deep dived into danger.
Oh really?
Caves belonged into danger film, and he was the bad guy ultimately in that too. Can't remember what it was. Sanctum, something like. That.
Yeah, I find him quite an attractive man. Anyway.
that's why he keeps getting cast. He's not a great actor.
He's a good looking guy. Anyway, but people, this is a rom-com with Captain America in it, and it's kind of a movie lover's rom-com. It's about a screenwriter who's Chris Evans. He's working on a script for a romantic movie. He's having a hard time because he's really jaded because when it comes to love, his mother abandoned him when he was like a boy. So he spends his time ruining every relationship he has, but he really needs to write the script, so he turns to his friends for their experiences, but it's not enough, and it's... I'm going to say to you that it does not turn out any differently to any other rom-com.
Shock horror.
I know. And that's why it's low on this list. He does have to stop a wedding at the end. That kind of shit, okay? However, there are funny bits in this that made me laugh. And I hope you don't yell at me, Paul, but this is funny, okay? His mate, Topher Grace, he's got a gay friend, Topher Grace, right? And Topher Grace... I just found this funny, okay? I'm sorry, people. Topher Grace walks up to him because they're sitting in a bar and he walks up to him and sits at the table. And Topher Grace greets him like this. He goes, "What up, N-word?"
N-word?
N-word. N-word. He's saying,
I get it.
Oh, yeah.
My stony face is, that's funny?
No, he didn't say the... He's saying, what up, N-word?
No, I get it.
What? That seems not funny? It's funny. Come on. It's a stupid play on that shit.
Let's go to Captain Holt for how funny it is.
Time for the next level.
You know what? Maybe you can eat my ass twice. At least have the good grace to cut this shitty part of the sound. You're a bitch. Anyway, now that Paul's taking up all the time.
I'm taking up all the time.
Shitty 8-minute long fucking thing. There's a lot of scenes of the writers pitching to each other like things, and what happens is when they depict it, it's always Chris Evans playing the characters in each thing.
You know my instant problem with these movies?
What?
Other than that joke.
You're a bitch if you don't understand this shit, but go on.
It's that anyone would have to not choose Chris Evans as a choice. So whoever is interested in
Yeah.
Know who it is in the film.
Yeah.
She's marrying someone else over Chris Evans.
Well, it's
bullshit.
It is. The thing is, this is a 2014 film.
Still.
Is that pre Captain America? No. Look, it's still Chris Evans. Don't get me wrong. He's
Avengers
getting a load.
2012.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Or 11.
I don't know. I think quite a few women would choose Ian Gruffudd over Chris.
No, they would.
They
not.
Would. They would. Some women like.
If you're a woman out there who would choose Ian Gruffudd. In fact, I'll put this up as a Twitter poll.
Oh, hang on. There's a factor here. In the movie, Ian Gruffudd is rich and he's not.
All right.
Ah!
Who would you choose if you're into men? Ian Gruffudd, rich, or Chris Evans, not rich, with potential to be rich? Who do you choose?
Chris Evans is a writer. So, yeah, look, I'm not saying he's going to be. Yeah. Look, a lot of women are going in. I'm telling you, man. I'm telling you.
Chris. Every time.
Look, I choose Chris. Don't get me wrong. If there's anyone's dick going to be in my ass, it's me, Chris's. Not Ian's.
I can't even say it without laughing. If there's any podcast that has their finger on the pulse of what women want.
Their friends joke where it's like, hey, do you guys know anything about chicks? And Chandler goes, foul? No. And then he goes, women? No. Oh, Jesus. Anyway, don't watch this movie.
God.
Okay.
All right. Well, next off the rank is a film which I do give a cautious recommendation to, if you happen to be a horror fan or a Deep Blue Sea fan, because my number 7 is Deep Blue Sea 3.
What? There's a 3?
Surely is.
Thomas Jane?
Nope.
I didn't think so.
LL Cool J? Nope.
Nope. What's her name? That chick?
It's where she dies, Saffron Boris. So.
Did she die?
Yep. At the end of the first one.
They killed the chick?
Yeah.
And let the African-American dude alive. No, he makes a joke about it in the movie. He goes, brothers never make it out of a big situation like this. And then he does.
One of the big strengths of that movie was who survives and who doesn't. I agree.
I just forgot who lived and died. That's all. No. This happens all
I'll tell
the
you
time.
Who is in the film. The main star is, do you remember the daughter from Lost? Like Benjamin Linus's daughter?
Is she Aussie?
No, she's like this French chick in that film, which I think, I'm not sure if she's French or not in real life.
Yeah, I barely do. Please, go on.
Tania Raymond, she is the star. As you can tell, there's a lot of stars in this movie.
That's top billing.
There is absolutely no one you will recognize from anywhere at all. But basically, it follows, big surprise, bunch of smart sharks escape.
Yep, I thought there might be some smart sharks going on.
And they head to this little place, this little atoll. It's not even really an island. It's a human-made group of islands.
Oh, islands.
When I say islands, I mean like floating shanty town type. Imagine floating in the middle of the ocean. And it's a research point. And
so not dissimilar to the first one.
Yeah, kind of. But way not tech like that.
Oh, way low tech. Okay.
Yeah, low tech. Just huts floating on the surface.
Good call.
With shit
really?
Yep.
Shit.
And they're diving down to whatever the shark habitat is beneath them. These other rogue sharks escape, being pursued by these mercenaries who are trying to kill the sharks / capture them.
Why?
Leading by the scientist. The lead scientist happens to have been with the lead scientist of this research facility, which is the woman from Lost.
Yeah.
Grown up now.
Yeah.
And they have a history, and the two forces combine to try to take down these sharks that have approached.
Oh, okay.
It is way better than the second one. It is still marred by terrible straight-to-video effects.
Yep.
And that's always going to be the problem. Had this had an extra $15 or $20 million to make the effects good, this would have actually been a decent
action
thriller.
So you're saying that the movie itself is, with good special effects, would have been all right?
Yep. 100%.
So only the special effects fucked it up. The story didn't fuck it up.
Not only. It's not like it's an 8 out of 10 film at that point. Or a 9 out of 10 film. It's still what it is. It's still a straight-to-video, schlocky, direct sequel, right? To a film which was already pretty schlocky and cheesy at the start. But it's fun. It's detached brain. Have a good time. Have a laugh at how some of the dumb decisions. It's not as good as the first one in terms of who survives and who doesn't. But it's good enough.
And you do recommend it?
Yeah. No.
Tough one.
I recommend it for horror film fans or fans of Deep Blue Sea, as I started by saying.
Okay.
I don't recommend it for anyone who's curious.
Yeah, I've got a few of those.
But hasn't sunk their teeth into this franchise. Just skip it, otherwise it's not for you.
Mind drive. Okay. Fair enough. Coolio, my number 6 is, Well, okay, so I used to have this girlfriend who came from Britain or spent a lot of time in Britain, and she used to tell me about this TV show called The Sweeney, which she quite liked. I never knew what it meant, but apparently it's about a police flying squad.
Is it Ray Winston?
Ray Winston. This is the movie. This is a movie, so it's a 2012 movie. Ray Winston's in it, who I am told that Ray's official Hollywood title is Ray fucking Winston.
Right? That's makes sense.
Just who he is, all right? Action drama film. Inspired by the by the way, the Sweeney is Sweeney Todd Flying Squad. That's the Cockney rhyming slang.
Oh,
so it's the police
that's
flying
where it
comes
squad. From. I didn't even know that.
I don't even know if the British police force actually have a flying squad. If anyone knows, can you please let me know? Because they are supposed
Wayne
to be.
I would like to join.
I would like to join. No, I would. I'd get my ass kicked. But this show, right? This flying squad is so elite, right? That they go and do a bust, like a drug bust. They jump people and stuff, right? They don't even have guns. They walk out there with fucking baseball bats. And even though the criminals have guns, they beat them all up, and they don't. That's how they make the arrest. And they're so untouchable for some reason. They just that's it.
Because no one chooses to shoot them, or because they're just too good with a baseball bat.
They're all because they're all cunty.
They're like they're like equilibrium dodging bullets.
They're not that they're good because they're not played to be like fucking Christian Bailey, right? But they're
or Ty Dixie.
None of those, right? But they just run in, and instead of using guns and saying "get on your knees," and they just beat them up. Right? And so the movie is interesting in that way. It's got there's a rapper named Plan B, and it is. He's a white guy, and he is actually very big in Britain. He came onto this. He's actually very good in this movie.
Really?
I don't like him as a person because he's a bit of a dick. But
shock horror, a rapper's a bit of a dick.
I know, right? But he's actually quite good in this. And also, the chick in it is Peggy Carter, Agent
Hayley Atwell.
Hayley Atwell.
Can we not call her by a proper name?
The thing is, she's so young in this. She looks like an All Saints fucking band member. But then she grew up to be
Peggy Carter. I understand
why
it fell at Wayne's number 16.
I will tell you this, right? This has a 48 Metascore, right? And it came out in 2012, all right? But I will actually say that I quite liked it. So my recommendation is, if you like The Sweeney, you should watch this. If you like British cop drama fanging things, this is actually not bad. The only problem with it is that Hayley Atwell hooks up with Ray Winston in the movie, and that's just a fucking fairy tale.
That is a throwback to that 1980s, isn't it?
Literally, I looked at it and I went, "Oh, come on!" I know he's the leader of the gang, but
Sweeney.
No way, man. Anyway, so there you are, The Sweeney.
Fucking Ray Winston's all his Christmases came at once.
If that happened in real life, he would just implode by shitting his pants.
All right, well, my number six, another qualified recommendation. This time it's for a sequel to a film I spoke to you about a few weeks ago on the show, The Babysitter from McGee, which is on Netflix.
I know, yeah, I remember.
Check it out. I think you should.
Cool.
This is the sequel called The Babysitter, Killer Queen. Of course, with the requisite Queen song. Killer Queen.
That's the song? I didn't know that one. Wow, you knew an old song and I didn't. Well, this is a momentous day, everyone.
Anyway, it's also directed by McGee, and it follows the... I'm obviously going to spoil the end of the first one here.
You may as well.
If you haven't seen it, and I don't know whether you ever will, but I think you might find something to it, because it's very stylized.
Okay, do something for me. Just somehow don't give it away.
I'll try. Look, I'm sorry. The main character of the first film fucking survives, because
okay,
here
fine.
He is
that's
here
fine,
again.
That's all fine, right, that's fine, motherfucker.
Cole, his name is, and he is a good-looking young fella.
Good-looking fella.
Inexplicably chooses to dress and act like the biggest dork in the history of the universe. He wears corduroy suits to school and a tie.
Now, is it played for he's odd, or is that like a
it
cool?
is played for he's odd, but it, no, no, it's played for he's odd.
Yeah,
and of course he gets picked on endlessly. And I don't. And when he's 12 and he's odd, because of what he's into, that makes sense in the first one. But now he's 15 or 16, it doesn't make sense.
Yeah,
it's so dumb it hurts my brain. Anyway, the neighbor who witnessed some of what happened also survives the first film. She is kind of into him, the film leads you to believe.
15 years old he is.
Yeah.
Go on.
Yeah, I think that's what he's meant to be in the film.
Yep.
And anyway, things kick off again with the same type of satanic cult trying to murder him, because if they murder him as an innocent, mix his blood with the
That's
the
what
sacrifice,
the babysitter's about? Wow. Yeah. Okay.
Then they will raise whatever demon and have all their dreams.
How is that? McGee.
Huh? Yep. It's super gory, but in that ridiculous over-the-top kind of way.
That makes it not offensive?
Exactly.
Excellent.
Yeah. So I think Brain Dead level of... But like that's more gory than this, because every film, no film is as gory as Brain Dead.
Yeah, pretty much.
But like when splashes of blood coat someone, it's not just like a yeah. drape across the face. It's like they poured a bucket over yeah. their head. So it's so over the top, it's hard to be
Yeah, no, that's
offended.
I can actually sometimes handle it.
Yeah, and a CG as well, which take or leave whether it's good or bad mm-hmm. for your purposes.
McGee's doing this one too?
He is doing this okay. one as well. It's nowhere near as good as the first one. The first one was such a surprise. It was a lot of fun. Came out of nowhere. This one takes it just too far, and it's kind of just repeating the same thing.
Yeah, yeah. He's so a music just, video director.
Yeah.
I get it.
Yeah, yeah. It's a little bit Charlie's Angels Full Throttle to Charlie's Angels.
Yes!
You know what I mean? Like, you're a little bit feasted out on it.
Exactly.
But still, they commit so hard to the gore gags, it's hard not to laugh, it's particularly for someone like me.
Okay.
So I had fun. I like Cole enough. If just they didn't work so hard to make him be so fucking outside, because it doesn't make any sense. There's no one who's that intelligent as he's portrayed to be in the film, or at least normal, that he would behave that way and not understand why people treat him badly. It just doesn't follow.
But it's, so, but you still think this is a recommendation?
No, it's for not horror fans.
Horror fans
or
only?
Horror comedy fans. No, yeah. If you haven't seen the first one, absolutely do not bother. If you have seen the first one and you're on the fence, check it out. If you didn't like the first one, don't bother. It's worse.
If you had to give it a score. I know we don't do this, but...
56.
Okay, so
we
like
do. I ask you all the time. 56, yeah, okay. 57.
Yeah,
okay. No, 54.
54? Yeah.
It's just 2.5 star. It's better than 2.5 star, but it's not good enough to be a 3 star.
Yeah. All right, got it.
Yep.
Nice one. My number, I haven't put numbers here. Is
5?
Yeah, all right. Now, Paul, are you familiar with Steve Coogan?
Yes.
Okay.
Trip to
Italy, trip to this. Yep. Yeah, yeah, that guy. But also pretty much everything, Tropic Thunder, all that kind of shit, right? So he has this character called Alan Partridge,
mm-hmm.
right? And now this is probably only well known to our British listeners and some other folks who are just enthusiasts. I actually love that Alan Partridge show. This movie he did is called Alan Partridge, Alpha Papa.
I've seen it.
Have you?
When he's in a radio station.
Yes! Yeah, he's facing this uncertain time because his radio station's been taken over by a conglomerate. Makes it worse when he basically handles things badly. And takes the radio station into his own hands, this bad guy. And Steve Coogan has to basically help the police by hostage negotiating with this dude. It is. Did you like it?
I'm actually going to look up what I scored it 4 or 5 years ago.
Because I thought it was really funny. Now, look, I do actually like this. I actually went and saw Steve Coogan live. And he did this character on stage. I will tell you, his TV and movie work is better than his stage work. Just saying that.
Well, it gets 3.5 on Letterboxd. I don't have a score for it. I don't. Oh, no? No? No, I don't. So, obviously, I watched this even before I started doing Letterboxd.
Well, I think that the reason that this is number 6 for me is that...
5.
5? Is it 5? Yes. 5. 5! is that if you like Alan Partridge, you will love this movie. He's really, really funny. If you don't know Alan Partridge, I actually kind of might say still give this a go. Because then you look up all the other shit and you'll have a good time.
That was me. Yeah. I hadn't watched or seen any of his TV show and I watched this and thought it was okay.
So it was okay? Yeah. It's. I think, yeah, if you like him, love it, fine. If you don't like him, don't know him, okay.
All right.
So yeah, there you are. Number 5, Alan Partridge.
Nice, short, to the point. I'll be the same for my number 5, which is a film directed by Dave Franco.
Ooh.
Yeah.
It's called direct.
The Rental. It's his directorial debut.
Okay.
And it stars Dan Stevens from Downton Abbey.
Okay.
Alison Brie.
Oh, yeah.
And a couple other people as well. Basically follows two brothers and their girlfriends who go off for a weekend away at this like a Airbnb type place, but a really rich, lovely place that they book.
One. Yep.
Yep. The Rental, as per the title.
Nice.
And the tagline is secluded getaway, killer views. I guess you can see where this film is going.
Just a feeling because it was on your list, but go on.
Yeah. So it's a thriller horror film.
All right.
And they're being observed, slash someone's got cameras through the house that's observing them, and shit goes south, let's put it that way. One of the brothers is involved with one of the women, but he's kind of thing for the other brother's girlfriend, and things kind of go pear-shaped from there. It's fine.
It's fine?
Yeah.
Dave Franco's doing horror movies. Horror-ish.
Yeah,
movies.
I guess at the end of the day, really, this last act is a horror film act.
That's fine. I mean,
I'm not quite recommending it unless you're in. If you're into horror, if you're into thriller, it's worth checking out. It's not hardcore at all. I think as far as horror films go, for someone like your good self who doesn't really like them but is interested enough in the thriller side of things,
yeah,
absolutely watch it.
Okay, it interests me.
I think
that
you'd like this more than me, if I'm really honest.
Okay, that's not bad because Dave Franco, being James's brother, I would have thought if he started doing movies, they'd be like a bit more serious. But I like that he's not doing that.
Well,
doing horror. Well, thriller
yeah,
horror.
Yeah, this is pretty... I mean, it's played very serious. There's occasional laugh, but this is not a horror comedy. This is a straightforward serious.
Oh, okay. Film. All right. No, yeah. I get it.
Played very, very straight. Let's put it that way.
The Rental.
The Rental. And it was the number one video on demand film about 8 weeks ago for like 3 weeks in a row because everyone was intrigued by the cast and Dave Franco, I think, directing.
So apparently not bad. All right.
2.8 on Letterboxd. So it's not exactly setting the world on fire. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, but okay.
But any horror film that gets over 2.5 is generally pretty decent.
Yeah,
I think.
Because it's exactly. That makes sense.
Most people who watch it then go, fuck this shit, and downgrade it.
Yep. Like me. Well, I've never downgraded it, but anything. Okay.
Lying sack
on IMDb.
No, that was Letterboxd, but yes.
Oh, Letterboxd, sorry, yeah. My number four is a movie called Motherless Brooklyn.
Ah, did you not talk about this one already? I think you did.
No.
Or did we talk about off mic?
You told me that you wanted to watch it.
Yeah. I thought you told me he's a stutterer and I'm not sure about it. And
yeah, I said I wanted to watch it.
Oh, I had to maybe watch the trailer.
Yeah, I think it only was.
We can go back to the last, top 10, last 10, or the one before.
Go ahead, because I saw this.
It's on my list.
I saw this last night.
I haven't got around to it yet.
All right, well.
So, yeah, it's decent.
It's interesting. It's set against the 1950s New York, and it follows this Ed Norton, his name's Lionel, and he's a lonely private detective, and he's afflicted with Tourette's syndrome as he ventures to go solve his friend's murder. The murder's friend is Bruce Willis. It's at the beginning, episode of the beginning.
Good.
Sorry, spoilers.
That's exactly the way Bruce Willis should appear in films. Appear and disappear real fucking fast.
This is like a day's filming for him, I reckon, because he still is in the movie, but anyway, you'll see. So he's got Tourette's. I've got Tourette's. And it's not anywhere near as bad as this guy's. Yep. Like, he actually curses. I think it's funny for most listeners to think, Wayne's got Tourette's? What a shock. He's always like, fuck.
It's not the way you're thinking.
No, it's not. I actually only get like little tics and stuff. It's never really gotten my way. Mm-hmm. But it's interesting to me to look at this movie. And the way Ed Norton actually explains the urge of Tourette's and stuff is actually quite spot on. And it's kind of, it's interesting for me on that point of view.
So it had a personal resonance.
Probably that. That's the reason I went to it. Now, here's what I'll tell you. One, Alec Baldwin's in it. Fucking amazing.
There's the other reason why I went to it.
I know. Secondly, this movie has scenes like in, there's a famous painting called Nighthawks. And I can't remember who the painter is. But a lot of scenes in this movie, the stills look like that. They're actually lit from like the side and it looks like an old 50s thing. And they're actually beautiful. I was actually screen capping them going, I'm going to try and draw that. I don't know. And that is all great, but here's the problem. It's too damn long.
Okay. How long is it?
144 minutes?
That's not that long. That's like
2 and a bit. Was that?
Oh, no, 144. No, you're right. 2 hours and 24.
Yeah, man. That's 2.5 hours just about, right? And so it's like and this is Ed Norton's.
That was indulgent. Oh, he directed it.
He did it. He produced it. He stars in it. He's got all these jobs.
Well, that's what he has to do now because no one wants to work with him.
Is that? Oh, yeah. You know what, though? I will tell you something. It is beautiful to watch. I still actually quite liked it, even though it made me wait too long and it was too slow. I was enjoying the aesthetics so
much.
You're
not putting me off it. I'll definitely watch
it. Yeah, it's not bad. It's not bad. So it's pretty cool. I liked it.
Nice. Cool. Give approximate score. I'm not asking you to pin it down to a
point. Look, it's because it was too long.
Three stars?
Yeah. What's
60?
Probably 58.
Okay.
58.
Yep. No. All right. Yeah. My number four is where I do start to recommend hard.
Hmm.
This is a film called Waves from last year. It's directed by Trey Edward Schultz, and he's the guy who directed It Comes at Night, which was a horror film from a couple of years ago with Joel Edgerton. And it was a really sort of high concept film where you don't really know what it is that comes. Like, you never find
out. I remember you telling me this one, yeah.
And I didn't love that film. This film's better. Like, this is a director on top of his game, at least for the first, I want to say, 2/3 of the film.
Hmm.
Magnificently put together. And it basically follows an African-American family. The son is in late high school, last year of high school, and he's a sensational basketball player.
Yeah.
And the dad is the guy from The Predator and This Is Us, Sterling K. Brown.
Oh, yeah. I like that guy.
And he's like driving his son really hard. Mm-hmm. And he's got a younger sister and a stepmother, if I'm remembering myself correctly. It's been a while since I watched this one. And it's the shit that befalls his family. It's a family drama.
Yeah.
But the way it's presented, it's just beautiful. There's this oversaturation of colors. It's this sort of swooping kind of camera which sort of rotates around things.
That sounds cool.
There's this brilliant shots in the middle of a car where it just keeps doing a 360 around him, a la Alfonso Cuarón of Men around and around. Just beautiful. And when it's the first parts of the film are focused on the son.
Yeah.
The last part of the film is focused on the daughter.
I'm intrigued.
And the film loses its way when it focuses on the daughter. It's nowhere near as powerful. It's nowhere near as clever.
Mm-hmm.
It's trying to thematically close things up, but it's not as good. The first half to 2/3 of the film, I was like, oh my God, this is 4.5-star material.
So you're blown off by the visuals.
The last, in particular, the direction is the star of this movie. And the performances are excellent, don't get me wrong. I don't even know whether these kids have been in anything before. They're very good. Yeah. When I say kids, they're 18, 19, whatever they are. Yeah.
That's kids.
But the last third of the film, it's trying to bring some of these themes home. It doesn't do it effectively.
Does not stick the landing.
No, I don't think so at all. It falls a little bit apart, so I dropped it down to like a 70.
Did you, tell me the name again.
Waves.
Waves, and it was beautiful enough to make you think 4 stars 2/3 the way through.
4.5, mate.
4.5?
I was so engrossed in this story.
It's actually still worth watching now.
Oh, hey, this is what I'm saying. I'm recommending it. I'm just letting you know it doesn't stick the landing. Be aware. Have at it. You would not have fun with this film. But enjoy it for the spectacle that it is.
Okay, cool. I will take you back to something that I used to do back in the Disney, probably early aughts, I would say. Me and the old work Scooby Gang used to have this thing we would do called T-Fact, and that stands for Teen Flicks and Cosmopolitans Tuesdays. Now, what we would do is we would go and drink Cosmopolitans, because it was around the Sex and City era, and then we would go to the movies in the cinema. Okay. Now, there was a movie called Get Over It, which I always wanted to watch, called with Kirsten Dunst in it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Never heard of it.
I know. It's a teen flick. It's the most teen flick ever. Now, listen to the cast, though. We missed it at the time, so I just found it again. And oh, my God, it's here. Click. Boom. Kirsten Dunst, Ben Foster, playing a young teen dude, right? Cisco. Do you know who that is?
Nope.
Okay, he was in, Wild Wild West. Anyway, he's a rapper. He's a rapper. And Colin Hanks and Martin Short. Now,
hot damn!
Paul knows I'm something of a Kirsten Dunst fan, but I will tell you that this is basically, this kid is he's a popular high school basketball star, gets dumped by his lifelong girlfriend, and then he starts, it's a school thing, and he gets into a love triangle, and the guy in the love triangle, who are both trying to get Kirsten Dunst, is a boy band member, an actual boy band member, like not a real one. So this movie is full of boy band jokes, and hence I loved the shit out of it, okay? I know it's another teen romance movie, but for me, the acting of the two main characters and the gags in it, and Martin Short as well, is actually pretty good in this.
So it's a straightforward comedy or a straightforward comedy?
Straightforward comedy. There's nothing.
Get over it.
Get over it, right? Check it out. It's also got Mila Kunis in it. Sorry, there you go. Some parts of the movie are playing weird.
Damn.
Hey, look, I'm telling you, right? Somehow this movie captivated me to like
Kunis, I'm hitting that hot damn button.
You like the Mila?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Nice. All right. Well, there you go. So Mila Kunis. And it was
hot damn!
Quite a while ago that you saw Mila Kunis.
Hot damn!
I don't know why I'm playing into your hands. Fuck you. Everyone go see Get Over It.
That's why I listen to the countdown, ladies and gentlemen. Quality banter. My number three is a film that completely caught me by surprise. I'd seen it on a few radars of a few sort of genre websites, and then it came to Netflix. It's called I See You from last year, and it stars Helen Hunt.
Oh.
Except it doesn't really, because she's barely in it, even though it says it stars Helen Hunt. It's directed by someone named Adam Randell.
Okay. Look, I was a massive, massive fan of Helen Hunt's. Big Mad About You follower. Haven't seen her lately. Actually, I have. Not the best. So keep going.
Well, she has had a bit of plastic surgery. I think it's probably fair to
say. That's the problem. Yeah. She's had so much plastic surgery.
But I'm not here to talk about
it. I know. Sorry, looks. Paul. Sorry to bring it that way.
I was trying to engage your interest before I spoke.
Please, you got me. Let's hear it.
So it basically follows a 12-year-old boy goes missing in an opening sequence, which is impressively shot. We got some drone camera work going on and whatever else. And he's not grabbed. He's riding his bike along. He's knocked off the bike a la by a supernatural force.
Like
he's just like... Blown off the bike, and I'm immediately immersed. Like, oh, what's going on there? What's happening here? And then it switches to follow the lead investigator, the lead detective is Greg, and his wife is Helen Hunt, and she's had an affair not that long ago. So the family's fractured, the family's broken. They've got a son, he's a teenager. Shit starts going. At the same time, he's investigating this crime, this disappearance. Things in the house start going weird. Like, he gets, at one point, he's in the closet rummaging around, and something shoves him in the ass. Pushes him into the closet, and the door slams, and it's like...
So this is a ghost movie.
Yeah. There's ghosty shit going on at the same time. Like, yeah. What the fuck is this? How it comes together, you will not predict.
This surprised
you?
The film
takes a hard left about 2/3 of the way through. Not only that, halfway through it takes a hard left, and then it takes another hard right at the end.
And you clearly were impressed.
Yeah, I was. I was really intrigued. I enjoyed the way it was put together. It's different. And it's quite challenging, not challenging in the, oh, you won't get it, but challenging in the way, like, this is the way we're meant to watch films. This film doesn't do it that way. Like, it really does throw you for a loop at for a point in the film.
Okay, name again?
I See You.
I See You, and it came to the flicks. It's on Netflix.
Netflix right now. You can check it out there. I see you. Yeah, just don't go and expect it to be a Helen Hunt film. She is in it. She's an important part, but she's not the main character.
No, that's fine. That's fine.
And I think they've oversold it by putting her name first. And, you know, a la Netflix does.
Yeah. Oh, okay, cool. Very nice. My number three.
Two
is. Oh, yeah, it is. Enola Holmes.
Really?
Yes. Okay. No, did you see it?
No, I haven't seen
it. Okay, fine. So everyone.
I have heard our friend, aforementioned Dan from Netflix as well, and Caleb talk about it, and they weren't overly hot in it.
Yeah, I surmise that might be the case. Now, folks, if you haven't seen it, Enola Holmes is the Netflix movie, which just popped pretty recently. Millie Bobby Brown girl, whatever her name is, right? Millie Bobby Brown. Yeah, that's her name.
Nailed it. And then you added girl. Her name's not Millie Bobby Brown girl.
The young actress Millie Bobby Brown, all right, plays Enola Holmes, which apparently this is from some series of books, but basically she's Sherlock Holmes and Mycroft Holmes' little sister. Okay, she grew up in like with Helena Bonham Carter as a mother, and they hung out together.
Well, that'll fuck anyone up.
You know, Fight Club. So it's she and basically this movie is got. It's one of those shows where the character addresses the camera. Paul, I know you love those, all right?
Look, I love it when done well.
I suspect, and I will tell you this, you're probably going to watch it and say you're a bitch to me, which is fine.
Okay, here's what I heard Netflix will say about
it. All right.
She does that for a long period of time, then barely does it at all, and then does it again. That would shit me. You either do it like Christian Slater in Cuffs consistently throughout, or don't do it.
See, look, they would know better than me because they watch things better, I guess, but...
Less stoned? Less, I mean, wait.
I'm just guessing, all right? But to me, that didn't happen. To me, what was happening was she doesn't always talk to the camera, right? What she does do, which I really like, is a lot of the time she does like, address the camera and talk and talk and talk. But then sometimes in the middle of a scene, she will just for a second look at the camera and do a little smile and then, look away. So she's interacting with the audience but not talking with them all the time. And to be honest with you, it makes you feel... Like she's actually talking with you. Like she it does actually bring you into
it's not
the show.
Okay for a kid though, is it? This one, it's a bit too full on.
Oh, look, it looks like a PG to me. But then again, I'm not such a sensitive man. There is a scene where she's sort of someone's trying to drown her, and so she's like, and you see from underneath that she's like she's struggling. Not moving, and then she looks at the camera and winks, and then gicks out of it.
Right.
So it's stuff like that. So it's not. I probably wouldn't say show my little girl it, example.
That's where I was coming from.
Yeah, no. But there's these really cool old school animations, the transition devices. Henry Cavill. Let's just talk about Henry Cavill.
All right, I understand.
No. It's not just because I want to fuck him. I'm just saying that he's... I did find myself thinking, I wish this was a movie about Sherlock Holmes with just Henry Cavill in it. Okay, because he came
in...
That's
pretty much how Wayne thinks about most films. Wish this was a film about Henry Cavill. As insert main character.
Well, the problem, the thing that I had a problem with is Sherlock Holmes, Henry Cavill, he plays Sherlock Holmes like a cool sexual Tyrannosaurus Rex, all right? Like, he is.
Whoa, hold on.
He's a bit. But even Robert Downey Jr., when he was playing sexy Sherlock Holmes, he was still odd and people didn't like him.
Like Benedict Cumberbatch?
Yes, like that. This guy is Henry Cavill and he plays. Fucking look at me, everyone. Not like he's just he's a winner. Mycroft is not a freak. He's a bit of a prick. And then Enola Holmes is... I really, really like this show is what I'm trying to say to you.
Oh, well, clearly. You're really, number two.
But it doesn't get all the way there. I'm not saying it's like an 8 out of 10. It's not even a 7 out of 10. It's just a 6.5.
Yeah. Look, nothing on my list gets above 75.
Yeah.
So I'm there with you. Like my number two. Thank you for yours. My number two is the big surprise packet of the horror community of the year.
For number
it's
two.
A film called Host. It's from 2020. It was filmed during the height of the pandemic in March, April.
Oh.
And it's very, very clever. It's a film basically about a bunch of young girls, like I'd say they're in their 17, 18, 19, maybe 20 years of age range, maybe even 21. 21 to 18 range. And they can't hang out because they're in a pandemic. Right?
Oh,
and
the first movie about the pandemic.
Yeah. And so they refer to it without referring to it by name. No one says coronavirus, nothing like that. But they're like, well, you know, we just says, hey, how you going? Like, this is what we do every Thursday night. Like a Zoom hangout.
Yeah.
Which is what we did with our mates.
Absolutely. You
know? And one of them has organized to have a seance over Zoom.
Not bad. Right? It's not bad.
Of course, said seance goes wrong because the medium says, what you must do is treat this seriously. If you don't treat it seriously, things will go pear-shaped. Don't do that, please. And things happen. Someone doesn't take it seriously. Shit.
There's goes always out. One.
And it's great. It's kind of Paranormal Activity at that point.
Like, I was going to say, how was the execution? Is it just screens?
Yeah, it's just Zoom. It's all presented as a Zoom hangout.
Do they cut into one person and then cut back to all four?
No, people will drop off the shot and, yeah. we'll go in. We will zoom in to one person, yeah. but it's still just their Zoom cam. And
so that's never, how they filmed it.
It never.
Very clever.
And here's the real triumph for this movie. Sounds like it wouldn't sustain 90 minutes, right?
Yes.
You're 100% right. It's 56 minutes long.
Beautiful. Beautiful.
See this movie.
Host.
It is absolutely the horror surprise of the year. It's very clever.
56 minutes, yep. mate.
I just love this model. Let's not try and
put
something out to 80 minutes minimum because Hollywood says we fucking have to.
The only long ones should be James Bond movies. That's it.
And Henry Cavill's dick.
We know he's got a hog, man.
No, this is great. And it's such an easy watch. And like, it's genuinely creepy in a couple of places.
This is high praise coming from you, my man.
It's right up there for me. If I did a top 10 horror films of the year in a really bad year, it would be very high up the list. Maybe one or two.
Ah, okay.
So there we go. That's my number two. Host.
Very good. Mine, number
one. Give us
one.
A back. Give us a run back. And then, and then the point where you recommend, Wayne, and we'll wrap this one up then today.
Coolio. 10 Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey. Oh,
for fuck's sake.
I wish we hadn't gone back.
I was all happy with
here.
The world.
How could this be good, like, for you? How could you think it's good? All right. Spider in the Web is number 9. 8, Ava. And 7, Playing It Cool. 6, The Sweeney. 5, Alan Partridge, Alpha Papa. 4, Motherless Brooklyn. 3, Get Over It. 2, Enola Holmes. And my number one is a movie I'd never heard of before. It's called Digging for Fire.
Nice.
Digging for
Fire. We haven't got a single crossover today.
I know, right? Here's the cast. Jake Johnson, Rosemary DeWitt, Orlando Bloom, Sam Rockwell. Sadly, he does not dance in this movie.
And you still gave it your number one?
I know. Brie Larson, Anna Kendrick, Sam Elliott, Ron Livingston, Judith Light. Judith Light was the mom in Who's the Boss?
Who's the Boss?
Okay. Now, I will tell you this, folks. I thought it was going to be a rom-com. It is not. It is actually a drama. All right?
Okay.
But here's the thing, right? It's about this married couple played by Jake Johnson and Rose DeWitt, and they live in this cool Hollywood house because they're house-sitting it for 2 weeks because it belongs to an actress, right? Jake Johnson actually is fooling around in the backyard, and he finds an old rusted gun and it looks like a femur bone, right? And he's like,
right.
Yo! And he goes up to his wife. He's like, what's this? I think it's some fucking dead people and shit
like,
under here.
Cocaine is a hell of a drug.
Well,
because that's my assumption. Someone with cocaine in their system killed someone and then buried the evidence.
Well, it's in the Hollywood
Pretty
Hills.
Close, Paul.
This is what. Now, this, let me tell you this, right? On one level, you're not going to like the rest of this movie. And on another level, you might like some aspect of this movie. It does that whole thing where there is there people under the house and shit like that is a total subplot. The actual movie is a drama, and the drama is about actually life. It's actually about it deals with who you are as a person and who you become as a person after you have kids or get married. And there's like a sort of a meditation on trying to figure out who a man and a woman are once they do that. And there's a scene where like Sam Elliott, the female character is talking to her dad, and he's saying shit like, after marriage and a child, it's key to remain the person that brought something to the relationship. Like, when you get married, it can get confusing. Are you a couple? Are you a person? Is love getting what you want? Or is it giving someone else the thing that they want? Mm-hmm. And it's all these types of things that the movie goes through all the way. The end, I won't spoil this for you, but you never really find out who's... They find rings and fingers and shit like that. But it's just... it's for some reason, it's weird. It's a really... it kept me interested the whole time.
Okay.
And side note, Anna Kendrick has surprisingly large breasts.
You get to see her breasts?
You get to see them.
What year is this film from?
It's a 2015 film.
Okay.
So
did she show her?
She doesn't show the actual cans.
Oh, well, in that case, move on.
All of a sudden, I'm not the disgusting man.
My point is, you led us along there.
No, but you
like this film.
No, they're in like she's in. You see her bra, and they're just surprisingly big. Okay,
whatever.
Look, some. Anyway, I do recommend this film, but go in and make sure you're in the mood for something wistful as well.
Okay,
so,
all right. Well, my number one's also a bit out of sync, but I'll give you my 10 through 2 first. My 10, she dies tomorrow. Fucking piece of shit. 9, you should have left. Slightly bigger / smaller. I meant it's a piece of shit. 8, downhill. Yeah, it's a piece of shit. 7, Deep Blue Sea 3, not a piece of shit, but not great.
Yeah,
6,
smear.
Babysitter Killer Queens. Okay, if you're into the original. The Rental, my number 5. 4, Waves. Well worth checking out, especially the first 2/3. 3, ICU, one of the pleasant surprises of 2020, because there haven't been too many of those. 2, Host, a massive surprise and excellent horror film. And number 1 is a 1962 classic.
What?
It's called Harakiri or Seppuku.
Really?
Yep.
62?
Yep, one of the oldest films we've ever reviewed on the podcast, directed by Masaki Kobayashi. Kobayashi? And it basically, it follows a ronin who arrives at a lord's estate and says...
Explain what a ronin is, Paul.
A ronin is a masterless samurai.
That's right.
Who, so he arrives at another lord's estate and says, I would like the honor of committing seppuku or harakiri.
Yep.
It's not harakiri. I always thought it was harakiri. It's harakiri.
Yeah, harakiri, yeah.
Yeah. Killing myself ritualistically by disemboweling myself with a small sword and you having, well, your second chop my head off. In your grounds as an honorable death. Rather than starve to death or start committing petty crimes, here is where I'm at.
Hmm.
The lord of said manor says, oh my God, here we go again. We had this happen a few months ago. One of your kind also claiming to come from the same place you used to work for.
Yeah.
And we found out he was basically faking being a ronin to try and get favor with us so we would employ him. So we made him do it. In front of us. And they show that. They show
oh God,
this guy, basically. And it's pretty graphic in 1962. Like, it's black and white.
I was going to say, it's color or black and white? Okay.
Black and white, but, you know, this guy, he doesn't even have proper swords. He doesn't have a steel sword. He has bamboo swords. And he has to commit harakiri with this bamboo sword.
Bugger.
Turns
bamboo
out,
sword!
Yeah. Turns out the guy who first arrived, in the film, first arrived, has an agenda. And it releases huge conflict between he and the lord. I'll say no more about the film than that. It's a classic. It has 4.5 stars.
That sounds really interesting for
Letterboxd.
An old-ass movie.
Yeah, it is ranked in the top 10 films of all time on Letterboxd. And I can see why. Now, it's long. It's 135 minutes long. It's too long. Doesn't need to be that long. If it had shaved 20 minutes off, this could be one of the great films pre our life.
I've never heard of this before, man. When did you watch this?
When?
Yeah, when?
I watched it when I was down south on my recent holiday.
Nice.
On my iPad.
And what put you onto it? You've just heard it was
the
good?
The fact is in the IMDb top 250. And oh, okay. Very high. Just past 25,000 votes. It's blasted up to like in the 60s from vague recollection. So it's never dropping out ever again. This is forever in the top 250 films of all time.
And it's called Seppuku?
Seppuku or Harakiri.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
So do check it out. It's magnificent for its time. Had it been a little bit shorter, a little bit less talky,
yeah,
which I don't believe that time would have been, then it could have been an absolute masterpiece.
So subtitles?
Yes.
Yeah, cool. Very nice. That's a bit of a classy fucking choice there from Paul. Number
out
one.
Of
well
a
done.
Left field.
Yes, horror, 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 classy.
All right then, let's wrap up this episode. No honorable mentions, obviously, in a top 10, last 10, with your feedback on recent reviews at hand in a segment that we call the Pop 10.
Talk about. Talk about
Pop 10. Kicking off this week's Pop 10 with Kat on Twitter, who said, I recently watched Birds of Prey. I gave it a meh review.
Yeah.
Had potential to be pretty good, but it just felt like it was trying too hard. Margot Robbie was great, but let down by some pretty mediocre co-stars. So yeah,
I like the egg sandwich thing.
Yeah, okay.
That was great.
Moving right along. Sam Hurley, our good mate from the Movie Reviews 20Qs podcast and a patron of the show, said, June... 1.5 stars, the 1984 version.
Dune.
Yeah. Now, obviously, Dune was slated to be Christmas time.
Absolutely.
The remake / new version of it. Don't know whether that's going to come out anymore. I haven't heard it's officially moved yet, but I can't see it's going to release.
Did you like Dune?
No, not at all.
No.
Here's Sam's review. Curiosity killed the cat as I decided to go back and watch this after seeing the trailer for the new Dune. My God, this film was a mess.
David Lynch, right?
Yep. Yeah. Even knowing the source material, I was perplexed as to what the hell was happening. Absolute garbage.
Sting.
Fair play, sir. Judy from the Shaker Not Nerd podcast. Do check them out. Good mate to the show. Another patron said, here's mine. Godfather. Pretty damn good. Julio, another great podcast. The Contrarians, currently working their way through the Halloween series, said, rewatched Out of Sight. Possibly the best Elmer Leonard adaptation.
Yes!
Probably the best Steven Soderbergh movie.
Hell yes! This is an excellent choice, my man, and I'm glad you're on the board.
Thank you for that, Julio. Tim Cormack said, Peanut Butter Falcon, recommended by my 8-year-old nephew. Didn't disappoint. Peanut Butter Falcon time. Peanut Butter Falcon time.
Did you see it?
Good.
Good.
Good film. Yeah. Cool. Very enjoyable. And I'll add, Tim gave a second one, American Pickle. Very disappointed there wasn't a Rick in sight. That's a reference to Rick and Morty. However, that film is fucking garbage. I probably should have put it on my list.
American Pickle.
Yeah. Stars Seth Rogen. It's terrible.
Oh, I was going to see that.
So bad.
But then I was like, oh, but is it set? Like, yeah, it looks shit. That's unfortunate. Oh,
it's really, really bad. Wow. Thank you. LJ Human, Luke Human said, Girls with Balls from 2018, possibly the finest French volleyball-based horror comedy of the century.
Girls with Balls, you see?
Where else can you see a man stretch a chihuahua until it bursts? Four stars.
Okay.
I've seen that movie. It's terrible.
Is it shit? Yeah, okay.
Joey DiCarlo, aforementioned from the So Is It podcast, a tenant, colon, needs subtitles.
Yes, absolutely.
Austin Scott said, One Cut of the Dead. Thought it was rubbish to start and thinking, oh, God, what have I signed up for here? Then the way it flipped easily on my favorite films I've ever seen in my life.
That was your recommendation, mate.
A film I've recommended and Austin had given me credit for. Thank you for that, Austin.
Well done.
I was absolutely laughing my head off at some of the things that were happening and I love that it tricked me. That was nice. Troy Spinner from the Great Mates podcast, part of the CC Radio Network.
T.
Color Out of Space. Nick Cage eventually goes full Nick Cage and that's all you really need to know.
I'm on. I'm in. That's it.
Lou Fry. The Devil All the Time, the new Netflix film, had a more enjoyable experience listening to the argument that led to my parents' divorce than I did watching that show. Like that one. Chris Sutherland said, if it's TV shows, I can do as well as movies. I just finished Raised by Wolves, which is the most sci-fi, absurd, bizarre, wonderful show I've maybe seen ever.
Kevin Smith raves about this one as well. Have you heard
of
it?
May have to give it a bash. I've heard mixed reviews.
Yeah, I've heard some people say, that's it, yeah.
Mina Harker, Hunt for the Wilder People. Brace yourself, Wayne. I finally got around to watching this and I loved it. It's got some good laughs, some genuine heart, but a ridiculous climax cheapens the overall film. Exactly my review. Don't understand why you're part of Wayne's Brain.
Yeah, it's fine.
Paul Steed said, Bill and Ted Face the Music. The first two movies were great. Suck a dick, Wayne. This movie is a most bogus and egregious crime against storytelling and movie making. I felt awkward and uncomfortable watching them trying to recreate past magic. This was one big Melvin from start to finish.
See, and I thought they saved the trilogy.
And lastly, from Charles Gretsch, Street Kings. Second to last. From Charles Gretsch, Street Kings. Good movie.
Yeah, man.
And Keanu was great in it. Don't think it was Oscar worthy though, Wayne.
Did I say it was Oscar worthy?
No, you said Keanu Reeves' performance was Oscar worthy.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, fine. I was very impressed.
And he said number two, Midsommar. What the fuck?
Is it shit?
That's my favorite film of last year.
Is it fucked? It's fucked up, isn't it?
It's very
fucked. Some mind fucky shit.
Very fucked up. And lastly, John from the Pilot Comics podcast, another good friend of the show, said Evil Dead 2. I used to think Army was the best entry, but I'm leaning towards this now. So good.
Fair enough.
Absolutely fair enough. Absolutely. I'm very
Paul's
happy
that to me when I was a kid.
With that choice. And that is it for today's podcast, 288 of the Countdown Movie and TV Reviews. Wayne, how do the listeners get back to us with their feedback on the show or indeed general feedback in hand?
Use your friend Google to ask for the Countdown Podcast. You'll get all our socials, but also you can send us an email at thecountdownpodcast@gmail.com.
We're on Twitter at the Countdown PC. You can find us also on podbean.com where we host the show. You can like and follow us there. Check out the Facebook listener community where most of that feedback came from. Today, should search for it on Facebook. And lastly, ccradio.com.au for ourselves and some other great Aussie podcasts.
Damn right.
All right, Wayne, what's happening for episode 289? Do you remember, sir, our conversation from
hour
and 10 minutes ago?
Yeah, that's cute. Paul thinks that I remember the things we talked about 70 minutes ago. I do not remember, Paul. Not one bit. Let me try. Were we talking about... The thing is, we talked about two things, right?
Episode 289 is going to be the top 10 films you love that your co-host hates.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
And this comes from Julio again of the Contrarians podcast. Thank you for the suggestion, Julio.
Thanks, Julio. It's going to be a very personal episode.
Top 10 logical movie scenes. That idea was written by Sam for the Movie Views and Twitter Cues podcast. Didn't give him credit at the time.
Oh, my man.
Very, very sorry, Sam.
Well done,
Sam.
Do
check out their show. Wonderful show out of New Zealand. Do get on board. Now check out The Contrarians because Julio is a genius and they're watching the Halloween films and that is a labor of love/pain that no one should have to go through.
God, yeah, I wouldn't do it. Nice work, fellas.
That's what we're going to do. It's pretty straightforward. It's going to be one for the fans. Like, you've probably built up a sense of this over the years. Won't be a great end point to the show, which we'll acknowledge next week, but it should be a fun one. We're hoping for that. So,
a lot of snappy.
Yeah, there will be a lot of anger, a lot of soundboard, a lot of Wayne saying, fuck off. You. That is it for today's episode 288 of the Countdown Movie and TV Reviews Podcast. Thank you so much for joining us. My name is Paul.
My name is Wayne.
And this has been The Soundboard.
How would you like to suck my balls?
Yeah, it's balls. It's balls.
Take it back!
Also balls.
Kiss my sweaty balls, you
obviously
fat fuck.
Obviously balls.
There's a lot of balls.
Yeah, okay.
We'll catch you. She's a killer queen. Got bad agility. Dynamite with a laser beam. To blow your mind. Ooh, recommended at the price. Insatiable and appetite. Wanna try? You have to see them. What year is this film from?
Now. Like, it's. Oh, wait, it's a. Sorry, I don't know. I can look it up. I'll look it up.
Give me the answer. Don't seem like the incompetent fool that you are.
I think that ship has sailed.